What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another thrilling, exciting episode of Between the Tackles. I am your host with the most. I'm Hogan. I'm back. I'm taking the wheel this week. I'm stripping that thing away from Burgess because he's I'm going to put him on mute maybe a few times today. You know, he doesn't have to mute himself. I went 3-0 in my picks last week, so I'm just going to be flaunting my chest over here, you know, peacocking all over the place. These guys, they're my minions today. What I say goes. So that's why I'm running the show like this right now. So that's what's up. I hope everybody's having a fantastic week. I'm having a fantastic week. Burgess, I don't want to talk to you right now. I'm going to throw it to Manish, my other buddy down here. Manish, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I mean, I went 1-2, and nobody can be perfect like you, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, I like the cockiness. It'll be that much more enjoyable mid-season when you're probably third in the picks.
Oh, stop that. That's not very nice of you. I was trying to be nice and throw it to you second because I wanted to hear from you. You at least got one win last week, but I see how it is. So, all right, we'll hear from the third guy over here. Burgess, I'd ask how you're doing, but I know how you're doing. You're probably terrible. How's the seller over there at 0-3? How are we doing?
I just want to say I just gained a bunch of respect for Manish coming at you like that, despite the nice words, tossing it to him first. I'm hopefully going to be doing better with my picks this week, but as we know, when we get into it, the way that we go about making our picks, I kind of got the shaft because I was 0-3 last week. So we'll see how it goes, but I'm excited to get into it.
That's right. That's right. And for you loyal listeners out there, we will have a graphic out this week on Twitter where we'll make sure that we show who is the reigning champion and where these other guys are at this point. And we'll have that going forward so you guys can keep track along with the three of us over here on the podcast. But speaking of stinkers, let's talk about our New England Patriots from last Thursday night. Final score was, I believe, 24-3 against the New York Jets over there in the Meadowlands. And boy, oh boy, that was not a blowout, I would say, in terms of what the final score was. But realistically, anybody who watched that game knew it was a blowout from the get-go. The Jets just dominated from the opening kickoff. Manish, you want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, you know, last week we were talking about how effective the Patriots were at controlling the clock, and they dominated time of possession those first two games, even though they lost the second game against Seattle. Last Thursday was completely the opposite. It's rare in the NFL when you see a team dominated with a 2-1 time of possession advantage. The Patriots didn't even have the ball for 20 minutes, and the Jets had the ball for 40 minutes. And like in a nutshell, if you're looking at one statistic that can kind of tell you how this game went without, you know, knowing how it actually went, you would just look at the time of possession, 40-20. You know, that's got route written all over it. Fewer than 3 yards per play is what New England averaged. That's not going to get it done. And I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more in depth, but now I was just looking at the raw numbers through three games, and the Patriots are either dead last or the bottom two or three in virtually every meaningful offensive category other than the run game. And they're only averaging, I think it's like 102 passing yards a game through three games. That's unbelievable in today's NFL. I mean, it's unbelievable back in the 80s when they didn't pass as much, but in 2024 to average basically 100 yards a game through the air is not going to get it done. So that raises a lot of questions. I know we'll be talking about that, but yeah, time of possession, they were never in it. And a lot of that goes to not converting on third down. There are only 2 third down conversions for New England on Thursday night. Very sloppy. It's a kind of what a lot of people thought the Patriots would be entering the season, but they played differently in those first 2 weeks. And, you know, I don't know if this is a harbinger of things to come, but they certainly can't play anywhere close to the way they played against the Jets. There's not going to be very many wins moving forward for this team.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. It was really unfortunate to see the competitiveness of the team on that Thursday night game where they'd showed a lot of hope and promise in week one in the victory over Cincinnati Bengals, where they kind of shocked the world. I forget if they were like 6-point underdogs in that one. They ended up winning 16-10. And then even though they came up short against the Seattle Seahawks in week two, it still went to overtime. They played them hard. There were some boneheaded things there, but like they played a very decent game in terms of what they're capable of doing. And for them to put up a stinker like they did against the Jets was just really unfortunate to see as a Patriots fan. Burgess, at the end of the game there, I know you ended up turning the game off early since you and I were chit-chatting at one point, because it was putrid to watch, especially going into the third and fourth quarter where there was just almost no reason to watch. At the end of the game there, Drake May did unfortunately see his first NFL action. Do you want to talk about that at all, or do we want to just move on and forget it ever happened?
I mean, those are the situations where it's like, okay, put them in there for a little bit. You're talking meaningless football at that point. The game was over. You know, the Jets, I didn't see this part of the game, but I'm assuming that they pulled some of their starters out of the game. And, you know, you're playing against a little bit of backups, a little bit of meaningless football there. Those are the only snaps that Drake May should see this year. Meaningless football, meaning you're not fighting to win anything when he's getting in there. And, you know, good for him to get in there and get some repetitions in a regular season game. Doesn't change my opinion at all about wanting him to sit, because this offensive line, I mean, you saw in that game, you know, against the Jets, Brissett was sacked 5 times, not to mention the amount of hits he took after throwing the ball and getting it out of his hand. So I don't want to subject a young, promising rookie to that type of beating, especially when it's kind of obvious that they're not going to play consistently. They haven't shown much consistency, you know, throughout the 3 games other than running the ball. And if the running the game does not show up and they're not able to successfully ground and pound, it's proven that this team cannot throw the ball. I mean, you touched on the lack of competitiveness, and that's what this game felt like. It felt like they just didn't even get off the plane. Like, there was nothing good about this team. And usually with this team, you're thinking the defense is going to show up and show you something. Aaron Rodgers picked them apart. And I think the missing Juwan Bentley in this game was huge. It was so noticeable not having the middle linebacker in there, the kind of the captain of the defense. So for me, sure, Drake May can play in those periods of time, but as shown in the rest of the game, it's not worth it to play him otherwise.
Yeah, a big thing that you touched on there is Juwan Bentley going down, where he's been the focal point of this defense for the last few years. You know, he's had over 100 plus tackles in the last 2 seasons, and I don't think a lot of people either know that or appreciate like what he brings to this defense. That has been kind of the small bright spot of this team over the last few years towards the end of Belichick's tenure. But yeah, going forward, it's your buddy over there, Duggar, has now been promoted to captain of the defense. Tell me about that. You're excited about it. I mean, I know you're trying to pick on me saying I'm not excited about it. I just think he's a decent player that needs to learn how to play coverage a little bit better.
I mean, if you're going to talk about a deficiency in his game, you're right. The passing game is where he's deficient. I don't think he's bad. I think he's above average still in that ballpark, right? You see him flying around, especially in the running game, blitzing, everything like that. He's all over the place, and he's making tackles left and right. I love that they re-signed him. He was a guy when he was drafted, I was like, who the hell is this guy out of a D2 school? Like, where did he come from at a high in the second round? I think we were all hoping for a wide receiver to be taken in that draft spot. And all of a sudden, Kyle Duggar, we're like, who the hell is this guy? But he's actually been a fantastic piece for this defense and one of the core players of this next generation of the Patriots defense. So, I mean, it shows, you know, where the team values him in terms of his, you know, leadership, the fact that he was named a captain to replace Juwan Bentley, who's seemingly going to miss a significant period of time to being placed on IR. So it's good to have one of those veteran guys from this defense kind of step up and kind of assume that role. And I love it. I love the player.
Yeah, well, we'll see if it turns out being better. I certainly hope so for our sake. But on the other side of the ball, Manish, I want to throw it back to you in terms of what this game meant for the New York Jets going forward, where they got off to that rocky start against the San Francisco 49ers, where everybody saw in primetime them kind of get their booties handed to them by Mason and Brock Purdy and all those guys. And then it was kind of a slog fest when they ended up facing the Titans in week 2, but they pulled it out in the second half, kind of started putting things together. Aaron Rodgers looked pretty vintage Aaron Rodgers on Thursday night. And granted, I know the competition was the Patriots, but a lot of people are saying if this is the turning point for the Jets going forward, they could be a dangerous team to contend with. Do you agree with that?
If Rodgers can stay healthy, I think he looked really good on Thursday night. And I think we touched on this before the game, even last week. I don't think his brain has deteriorated. He still can pick apart defenses, and he's still got a cannon for an arm. So those things, you know, haven't been, they've been marginally impacted, perhaps, at least the arm, the brain probably isn't. But it's about whether he can stay upright. They did a good job in protecting him. I don't know if that was a function of the offensive line or maybe the lack of a consistent pass rush from New England. Now, they did lose their right tackle, Morgan Moses, for a few weeks. They didn't put him on IR, so you'd anticipate he'd be back in two or three games. But, you know, that's going to force their first-round pick, Fashanu from Penn State, to play right tackle for a few weeks. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers, to me, can be good in any particular game, any single game that you can point out. The question for him is, can he stay healthy for the duration? So I think what Rodgers' message on Wednesday made a lot of sense. I mean, he said during his press availability, you know, learning and understanding how to handle success is key. He's seen basically everything in his two decades in the NFL. A 2-1 start doesn't mean anything, right? It doesn't mean you've arrived, you're a Super Bowl contender. So I think he's got a level head when it comes to that. But he did look comfortable. And, you know, it's interesting because the Jets really took away his best pass-catching weapon for the most part in Garrett Wilson. He had that short touchdown pass where I thought Christian Gonzalez maybe was a little too aggressive. But by and large, Wilson was a non-factor. It was the Alan Lazards of the world. It was Tyler Conklin who kind of ate them up, the Patriots defense up. And that's really, I think, more of a function of Aaron Rodgers' football IQ. So, yeah, this team's got a long way to go. I think you kind of hold your breath if you're a Jet fan every time Rodgers scrambles and runs. He ran a little bit more than I anticipated on Thursday night, but he seems to be healthy. But as anybody, especially Aaron Rodgers, knows, it all takes is one hit. And especially at his age, coming off the injury that he came off of, you know, you're not going to crown these guys after 2-1, but it's good that they beat teams that at least on paper they should beat. And this week they're heavy favorites again at home against Denver. So it's probable that they'll be 3-1 entering their London game against the Minnesota, which should be a fascinating game actually because of the hot start that Minnesota's off to. But yeah, it's a good start for them. And I think you want to be happy if you're a Jet fan that they've won these games, but I don't think you want to look too far ahead and consider yourself to be in a place where you're not, because again, with this particular quarterback, it's all about him staying healthy for the duration of the season and then seeing what he can do in the postseason. And I just want to circle back real quick, Birch, what you had said about Drake May and, you know, really only playing him in mop-up duty. I guess that was the message that you were sending. I'm curious to see what Gerard Mayo does. He's come out and said that that May takes about a third of this practice snaps with the first team, which is interesting to me because that doesn't sound like someone who's going to sit all season. I don't get the feel that it's going to be a Patrick Mahomes behind Alex Smith type of situation. I think it's going to be closer to, you know, what you saw with, you know, I'm dating myself, with Eli Manning when Kurt Warner was the starting quarterback, and about midway through the season, they handed over the reins, even though the Giants had I believe they were over 500 at the time or right hovering around 500. So, you know, as I've said many times, talking to coaches, they look at the season in quarters. We're wrapping up the first quarter of the season. If you look at the second quarter of the season that the Patriots are facing, there's some winnable games there. So you can look at it two ways. You got Jacksonville coming up, you got Miami coming up, the Texans, and then the Jets again. Those are the four opponents. There's two schools of thought. You could say, you know, maybe we can win some of these games with Jacoby Brissett and still kind of be in the mix. Or you could look at it as this is a good window of time to insert Drake May and have him play for three quarters of the season. So, you know, I don't know what path the Patriots are going to take, but I think there's a viable case to be made, assuming that the Patriots lose and fall to 1-3. There's a pretty decent case to be made to start May, unless you're really worried about the offensive line.
See, that's where I sit. For me, it's the offensive line that scares the living hell out of me. You know, putting that rookie quarterback back there, you know, we saw what happened with Mac Jones when he started day one, and we all know the results of what happened with that. Now, obviously, there are other factors at play as to why Mac Jones ended up the way he did. He's obviously not as talented as Drake May was coming out of the draft, but at the same time, That's my concern now. I have such pause about ruining another quarterback and doing what some teams like the Jets have done repeatedly over the course of the last two decades with quarterbacks and drafting high, having a high prized rookie, and then just imploding and the player ends up being damaged goods at the end of the day. That for me is my biggest concern with Drake May and putting him behind a line where he could either suffer an injury from being hit or start developing really bad habits that, or, you know, get away from them. Those are my concerns.
I mean, that's a fair concern. So I would ask you, what kind of shape does the line have to be in entering 2025 for you to feel comfortable to play Drake May? Because if it's only marginally better, you're going to run into the same problems. I mean, there's, you know, what you're saying has a lot of value, and I totally understand it. But I also understand the value of playing a quarterback is rookie season and taking the lumps, because this season really is about establishing a culture and getting some, I think, meaningful reps for your rookie quarterback so he can kind of hit the ground running in year two. You know, I saw that with Sam Darnold. By the end of his rookie season, he was playing great. Now, they changed offensive coordinator, so that kind of changed the equation for him. But there's a lot of value in getting meaningful reps. And as long as it doesn't turn into a David Carr situation where the guy's getting sacked, you know, 5-6 times a week, I don't know if the Patriots' offensive line is that bad. I mean, maybe it is, and you're right. But if it's just below average, and he's gonna, and May's gonna take his fair share of hits, but not a abnormally high number of hits, then I think there's a lot of value in him in gaining, you know, 8, 10, 12 games of experience as a rookie, so that things can be positioned better in 2025 for the entire team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if the offensive line's gonna perform to a level where you're saying, okay, they're middle of the road or like top 20, we'll say top 20, like top two thirds right. of the league, where they may be a little bit below average, absolutely I'll entertain that conversation. I just don't feel they're there yet, personally. So that's my scare. But I definitely agree with what you're saying about getting him some meaningful reps, because the only priority this season, as far as I'm concerned, and I think that the team kind of feels the same way, given how they address the offseason and everything like that, is Drake May's development.
Right.
If they end up, coaches end up feeling like, okay, he's ready to go, let's put him in there and see what happens, if they're comfortable with the offensive line. I mean, we know this team's not going deep in the playoffs. We know that they're probably not even going to make the playoffs. They may be destined for another top five pick, you know, if Hogan gets his wish. And, you know, that's the priority. Like, I've already punted the season. So, like, for me, the season is, let's just watch football and see what happens. And if that means Drake May getting meaningful reps, I mean, look at what Jaden Daniels has done in the first couple of games that he's played with a Commanders team that we thought was really absolute junk, just like the rest of these, like the Panthers, and maybe better than the Panthers. But you get what I mean by being in the same ballpark. And he's come in and he's played unbelievable. Now, granted, the skill set is different. Maybe Drake May comes in and he does that for the Patriots. Who knows? So if the offensive line is going to be able to keep him upright and make sure he doesn't sustain an injury, or like you said, become a David Carr situation, then sure, take your lumps. You know, you got to start feeling the hits at the NFL level to get rid of that happy feet, so you don't have that going into year two.
I think one thing that we got to take a step back and realize too, that it's just not the offensive line being the only glaring issue on the offensive side of the ball for the Patriots. For me, it's a big part is the skill team as well. And what I mean by that is the receiving group. The receiving group has not shown up in any three of these games to date, where you look at, I think their best receiver as of right now is DeMario Douglas, who literally only caught passes on Thursday night against the Jets. I mean, 6 catches for 69 yards. That might be the season high for any receiver on this freaking Patriots team. Like, Manish, you touched on the passing attack, where Jacoby hasn't cracked 150 yards passing in any of these three games. So, again, I agree with both of your assessments on here, but I think we also have to take a step back, too, that if Drake May does get meaningful time, he needs to have guys that he can throw to. And as of right now, Jalen Polk hasn't shown anything. I don't even know if Javon Baker's gotten on the field yet. DeMario Douglas, we know what he can show in flashes if he stays healthy. But other than that, I mean, the Seattle showed that if you just shut down Hunter Henry, then the Patriots don't have a passing attack and they got to rely on the run. But we've gushed enough about how much the Patriots stink. We all know that, unfortunately. I want you guys to tell me about some other big games that happened in week 3. Burge, I'm going to kick it to you and give me one or two games that, you know, you either saw the headline, final score, you saw something that made you go, holy crap, what do we got?
So I'm going to start off. I'm going to talk about Manish's boy, Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold and the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, I'm going to speak for myself. I did not have them at 3-0 coming out of the first three games. You know, given after the rookie quarterback, McCarthy, you know, ended up being out for the season, everybody thought he's going to play day one and he's going to, you know, start his development with this team. Sam Darnold, I've seen stuff floating around the interwebs about early MVP candidate. Obviously, we're very early in the season to be talking about that, but like that's the kind of the narrative that's around Sam Darnold right now. And, you know, given the way that the Vikings have performed, I'd say if we're naming an MVP right now, he's in the discussion. And, you know, obviously that's going to could very well change over the course of the season. We are only 3 weeks in, but to me, that has just been one of the biggest surprises and probably one of the better stories for me, you know, given everything that's gone on with Sam Darnold. You know, somebody in my fantasy football group chat saw my tweet about Sam Darnold killing my fantasy team, and he's the one who had it. And he just goes, he puts the clip up of Darnold saying, "I'm seeing ghosts right now," from when he was with the Jets playing at Gillette Stadium playing against Bill Belichick. And I'm like, that's me right now, because I went up against him and I didn't go up and pick him up. But, you know, four touchdowns again in week three. It seems like obviously it helps to have a guy like Justin Jefferson to throw the ball to, and a seasoned running back like Aaron Jones back in the backfield there. But it's just been a great story, and I'm fascinated to see where it goes from there with him up there in Minnesota. So that's my biggest takeaway from week three, outside of the fact that the Patriots are god awful.
What's interesting about that, Virgil, is that they're so balanced. Aaron Jones has exceeded every expectation that I had of him, and Darnold hasn't thrown the ball more than 28 times in any of those three games. So it's not like they're airing it out. It's really a quintessential balance when you talk about how that offense has been so productive. It's a great story. We'll see, you know, how long it lasts. But Darnold, you know, got a world of talent. I think it was Bill Belichick actually earlier in the week that said that even though he mixed up Darnold and Baker when he was talking about part of the reason why Darnold, Darnold has been so, you know, well regarded by some teams. But there is a lot of truth in that. Obviously, Kyle Shanahan thought enough of him to bring him in as a backup, and Kevin O'Connell, also former Jet and Patriot quarterback, thinks highly of him as well. So a lot of talent. It's a great story. I've always believed that he had the talent. Maybe he's in a place now where he can show that off clearly with one of the most dynamic weapons in the NFL with Justin Jefferson. So good story. For me, I'm going to look at the exact opposite. Stay in the AFC East. It is amazing to me how losing one player, even though it's the most important position in team sports, can completely derail a team, and that's the Dolphins. The Dolphins are averaging a league low 11 points a game, and this was the most explosive offense in the NFL last year. And with Tua gone and inserting Skylar Thompson and maybe Tyler Huntley if he plays quarterback this week, that team is lifeless. And every offensive weapon that they have, whether it's Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Devon Achane, they lose their bite. They lose their luster. They just cannot get off the ground with Skylar Thompson. And you saw Skylar Thompson, a couple years ago when Tua was hurt. And it's a completely different team. They are, you know, I would say that they're probably not a playoff team if Tua doesn't come back. And they're, you know, unbelievably one of the worst offensive teams if Tua isn't back. And that to me is ironic because Tua has his fair share of critics, you know, not saying that he's a star quarterback. He's more of a system quarterback. Well, if he's a system quarterback, they need to find another guy who can play in the system, because Skylar Thompson clearly can't do it. You know, they signed Tyler Huntley off a practice squad. I don't know if they're going to elevate him. I would be surprised if he were the answer. If you look at quarterbacks around the league, Jimmy Garoppolo fits the archetype. When you talk about the Mike McDaniel West Coast offense, Kyle Shanahan style offense, I just don't know why the Rams would want to trade him, given that Matthew Stafford is one injury away and injury prone himself. So if you look at the realistic pool of quarterbacks who are available, there is one guy who I think would be a good fit. I don't know if he'd be successful, but it would make sense because the team he's currently on really has no use for him because he's the third quarterback, and that's Zach Wilson. So I'm not saying Zach Wilson's the answer. I'm just saying he's a, you know, pedigree player with a lot of talent. He has starters experience. Maybe Mike McDaniel can do something with him, but it's slim pickings when you look at what could be available. And it's just amazing to me how lethargic and lifeless that offense is without Tua as their quarterback.
Yeah, one thing that I've been seeing a lot lately is a lot of people clamoring for Miami to go out and get Mac Jones and reconnect the whole Alabama storyline with Waddle and all that. And I was like, please go get him. go get them. I would love to see Miami do that and just laugh at that as they implode even further on themselves. But I'm going to actually, for my game that really was interesting to me, is I'm going to take the opposite approach of you, Manish, where you talked about a team that loses a quarterback and they just fall apart. I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers and what they did to the Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
I thought that team was dead in the water, and I honestly sat there and I was wondering for a while if Bryce Young was going to be a decent quarterback. It was just, you know, he was in a bad situation and it was just not working out for him. But apparently all you need to win a football game is the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton, to come in and save the day for you. Holy craptastic. I mean, you talk about a team reborn from the ashes. I was looking at the stat line for Carolina and it's absolutely incredible. First and foremost, Andy Dalton, 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. He's the first quarterback to do that in this season. And that's, I can't believe I'm saying that. It's Andy freaking Dalton of all people. But then on top of that too, like I said, the rest of the team decided to wake up. You got Chuba Hubbard getting over 100 yards rushing. I think it was like 114 yards. He added like another 40 yards receiving and a touchdown. So he had over 150 scrimmage yards, which I don't think you've seen that from a Carolina running back since CMC was there. And then on top of that too, Deontay Johnson, who I didn't even know was in the freaking league still, apparently decided to just show up.
Yeah, he was a big free agent. He was their offseason acquisition that everybody thought, was, at least in the fantasy world, thought was going to be a great player.
And he didn't even exist for the first 2 weeks because of Bryce Young, apparently. So like I said, for me, the big thing was seeing the Carolina Panthers kind of just shock the football world by just inserting Andy Dalton, benching Bryce Young, which now that I think about it, kind of, Manish, what you were talking about, Miami trying to reach out and get a quarterback. I mean, would that be a potential thing for them to look at Bryce Young? Because I don't know if are the Panthers talking about shipping him around at this point?
Well, Dave Canales said that at some point, Bryce Young could return, or maybe it was reported. I don't know if he publicly said that. But for now, obviously, Andy Dalton's the starting quarterback. I don't know if they start winning games and they're not in a contention for one of the top two or three picks in the draft. I don't know why it would benefit them to trade Bryce Young. I certainly don't know why it would benefit them right now to trade him. If they trade him, I think it'd be closer to the trade deadline when you get a clearer picture of what this team is. You know, I hesitate at giving up on a quarterback this early. However, Bryce Young has really not shown any signs that he could be a franchise quarterback. So if they make the decision that he is not the answer, then yeah, I would trade him. I just don't know what kind of return you're going to get for the former number one overall pick. But what are the Dolphins realistically going to offer for the number one overall pick? Typically, even failed number one overall picks, if you're going to trade him, after their second season, you're going to get more than what the Dolphins are going to offer. I can't imagine Miami would offer anything more than a fourth round pick. Is that enough for Carolina? Or would you just be better off holding on to them and then see how things shake out the rest of the season, then reassess in the offseason? And again, if you're Miami, are you going to win with Bryce Young as your quarterback? I don't see that in 2024. He's not going to suddenly transform into this great player who's going to be dropping dimes to Hill and Waddle. I think he's more of a developmental project. It's very similar to what the Cowboys did when they traded for Trey Lance. It's not like he came to Dallas and took over. He just kind of waited, you know, and bided his time and played this past preseason. Didn't look particularly good. So I don't know if there's any kind of short-term fix. And if, in terms of trading Bryce Young, I would tend to think if the Panthers do that, it wouldn't be until the offseason.
I mean, fair enough, but the Panthers also traded CMC for a second round pick, and I still think that was the dumbest thing I've ever seen by an organization, but I digress on that. But let's get into some stories that actually broke recently that I wanted to talk about really quickly. I know there's some injuries that have been going on. Obviously, we talked a little bit about Juwan Bentley, and we were talking about the Chargers, I believe, pre-recording, where I believe their whole unit is just banged up to crap right now, and unfortunately, they're playing the Kansas City Chiefs, who are welcoming a old running back to their facility 6 years after getting cut in a very controversial way that whole system went down there. Burgess, you got any thoughts on Kareem Hunt returning to Kansas City after all this time?
I think he'll be serviceable. I mean, in his years that he was with Cleveland after the whole debacle in Kansas City, he was a very serviceable running back in the platoon with Nick Chubb up there. I'm still scarred from the game, the opening night game when he was in New England, as I think he was a rookie, and spoiled my attendance at the banner drop ceremony for the Falcons Super Bowl there. And I just remember him running all over the Patriots. So, I mean, if he can be half of that player for the Chiefs, well, because obviously Isaiah Pacheco is out for a substantial period of time to help out that offense that, you know, despite being 3-0, I mean, Travis Kelce hasn't been what he was in years past. And, you know, this outside of Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy, there's really not a whole lot that has been standing out to you. Like, these are the Chiefs of, you know, one of the, you know, most threatening offenses in the league just because of Patrick Mahomes. Like, he's gonna help, I think. And it'll be interesting to see how he fits in there, you know, taking over for, you know, the injured Pacheco.
Burge, I'm going to stick with you on this one. Another part of the game that's going on this week with Kansas City versus the Chargers. Derwin James, one of the Chargers' probably better players on the defense, you know, behind Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack and those guys. He got suspended for repeated penalties for, I think it was unsportsmanlike conduct and, you know, unnecessary roughness with, you know, how he's lowering his... I mean, he's a missile out there on the field. He appealed it. He lost it. Is the NFL setting up the Chiefs to get another win here? I know I'm going to set off Manish down there. I want to poke the bear at this point. No, I digress. I'm kidding. Obviously, I know there's a whole lot of controversy going on with referees and Chiefs and stuff, but talk to me about Derwin James being suspended.
I mean, I saw a clip of the hit that he had. I mean, it was helmet to helmet, like leading with the crown of his helmet to make the tackle. I was watching a little bit of that Steelers Chargers game, and he was flying around out there like a missile. And this was before I think any of the penalties were called against him in this game. But that guy can hit. He is a very physical player. I don't want to say reminds me of a Rodney Harrison, but you get where I'm coming from when I say that. Like, he's just an outright physical player. I think, you know, the NFL is trying to eliminate these types of hits, and when the players are going to commit them, when, you know, the bad form or, you know, for whatever reason, you know, they're going to get penalized for it. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with him being suspended for it. And, you know, which, I mean, he's going to play with his edge. And when you play with an edge like that, these things are going to happen.
Manish, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there are any ill intentions. I mean, he's an aggressive, violent player. And as Burge said, you know, when you're playing on the edge, sometimes you cross the line. As long as it doesn't become intentional, like you guys can maybe help me out. About a decade ago, there's a player on the Bengals who kept getting fined, and I think he got suspended for a lot of like dirty shots, specifically against the Steelers. I remember he knocked out Antonio Brown once. Maybe it's the same player who injured Le'Veon Bell. God, I cannot remember his name.
Perfect,
Vontaze Perfect. Vontaze
Perfect. Right. Guys, like you don't want to get into a perfect type of situation where a guy's not reprimanded, you know, and there are no consequences for that type of play. I don't think Derwin James is a dirty player. I just think that, you know, sometimes he will do things that are technically illegal and there should be some kind of punishment. But that's part of the reason why he is such a talented player and such a valuable player for them. You know, will he learn his lesson? I don't know. When you're out there and the bullets are flying, you know one way to play, it's hard to kind of let up and go, you know, 80% speed and when you have that type of mindset. So I don't think it's going to change the way he plays. We'll see how that manifests itself. You know, again, I don't think he's a dirty player. I've never really thought he was a dirty player.
I'm very, very disappointed in both of you not taking the bait with me poking there about the Chiefs getting more help than they already get from the refs. But
I'm taking the bait later in this episode.
So, Hogan, I do have to say, last week we had a discussion about the pass interference, non-pass interference at the end of the game. This time, I actually do think the Chiefs got away with one. They had a clear pass interference in the end zone against Atlanta. It wasn't called. I don't know how you can look at that play and not find that to be pass interference. That was so egregious. I don't even think there's a gray line there. I think, you know, the guy had his hand wrapped around. I don't know if it was Drake London. It was somebody in the end zone.
Kyle Pitts.
It was a Pitts? Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah. That was such a obvious pass interference call that, you know, weighed heavily and impacted the game significantly. So, yeah, if you're a conspiracy theorist and think that the Chiefs get all the calls, I mean, that to me is a prime example of one that they got away with.
So for all you listeners out there, Hogan 4-0 this week. Well, put that down on the record books, okay? I'm 4-0 now because of that. So really quickly, guys, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we will be right back. All right, and we are back. Thank you guys for hanging out with us over here on Between the Tackles, brought to you by Fans First Sports Network. We're having a great discussion here, guys, this week, talking all the things about week three that went down and on some news and whatnot. But really quickly, before we get into everything that we're looking forward to with week four, I want to have a quick discussion where, Manish, you touched on earlier about this almost getting to about the quarter part of the season where we're in week four, we're about to get to week four, and even though there's 17 games now, we're going to call it the first quarter of the season. We got a whole plethora of 3-0 teams, and we have a bunch of 0-3 teams. Between the two of you guys, I want to figure out right now, we got some 3-0 teams, including the Steelers, we got the Vikings, who else am I forgetting? There's one more, Buffalo. Right? Buffalo. Yeah. And then for the 0-3 teams, we got the Titans, who we all know, well, I know is garbage, obviously, because I'm biased about that. We have the Bengals, which I think shocks a lot of people. And I thought Jaguars. There was one. Jaguars. Yeah. Jacksonville, my buddies down there. We're gonna talk about them really quickly. But really quickly, Burgess, I want to throw it to you first to start with. Any of these 3-0 teams, are they the real deal? Let's figure this out.
You would throw this to me first.
I would throw it to you.
Buffalo is a scary team right now. As much as I hate to say that. I don't know. I mean, with Miami going down in the division with Tua, obviously we saw that. I mean, it seems like right now it's the Bills' division to lose the way they've been playing thus far. They've kind of exceeded a lot of expectations with how that offense has, you know, lost pieces this offseason, mainly Stephon Diggs going down to Houston. They're scary. Obviously, you've got the Chiefs who are 3-0 because of the refs. I'm just kidding.
Whoa! No, you said it. I'm taking it.
Clip it. Every game they've gotten a call. But, you know, they're obviously the defending champions. You've got to respect what they're doing. They have the best quarterback, you know, in the league, in Mahomes. You've got to respect what they're doing. I love Minnesota through three games, as I just got done talking about Sam Darnold and their performance up there and with Kevin O'Connell up there in Minnesota. And one team you forgot to mention that's 3-0 is Seattle. The Seahawks are 3-0. They're a team that I think is going to come back down to earth a little bit. You know, they did have a hard time with New England. Just something, you know, about Geno Smith that, like, I have a really hard time, you know, buying a, like, true contender status out of. And, you know, just don't feel great about them. And the other team I don't really feel all that great about it are the Steelers. They are in a tough division. The Ravens have underperformed. The Bengals have clearly underperformed, as we just got done talking about. I think that division will tighten up as the season goes on.
All right, before we get to the stinkers with the 0-3 teams, Manish, any of those 3-0 teams out there, do you see them being the real deal? Like, I know Burge talked about this Pittsburgh being like meh. But I think their defense is legit. I mean, do you like Pittsburgh or do you like anybody else that's 3-0?
Well, I'm not going to hit the low-hanging fruit with the Chiefs because when you have Mahomes and Reed and you're 3-0, you're obviously the real deal. I mean, are they as good as they were last year? That remains to be seen. But, yeah, I'm with you, Hogan. I disagree with you, Burge. I think the Steelers are an ugly team, but I think they are the real deal. And you're 3 weeks into the season. You already got a two-game lead in arguably the toughest division, if not one of the top two toughest divisions in the NFL. They're the only team in the division with more than one win. And yeah, offensively, I mean, it's ugly. They've got 51 points in three games. That's, you know, that's not what you'd call explosive. But they haven't given up more than 10 points in any of their three games. And I think the defense will carry in the postseason if they do make it to the postseason. I think they're just one of those like non-sexy, ugly teams that will win a lot of games, 20-15 or 17-14. And it's not really going to grab a lot of headlines. But as long as Justin Fields can take care of the ball, the defense will always keep them in the game. And when you do that and you're in a division where a Super Bowl contender, or at least a preseason Super Bowl contender in Cincinnati is 0-3, then yeah, I think they're the real deal. I think they got a real chance now to win. And will it tighten up? Of course. I do think it will tighten up over the course of the next few months. But I don't think the Steelers are going to fold. And that's primarily because I think their defense is legit. And you know, barring injuries to key players, I think they're going to keep them in most games. I think most of their games, if not all their games, are going to be fourth quarter games. Their defense is way too good to consistently get blown out. So again, if Justin Fields takes care of the ball, and as much as I despise an Arthur Smith offense, it's so boring and so conservative. I think that when you have a defense like the Pittsburgh Steelers do, you play to that strength and you don't try to air it out 30, 35, 40 times a game and, you know, open up the door for possible turnovers. So I don't think they're going anywhere as long as the key pieces on defense remain healthy.
Another 9-8 season.
Oh, come
so
on.
You had them going 6-8 over the next 14 games?
I was trolling. I hope so, but I was trolling. I don't think it'll happen.
No, I agree with you, Manish. I think that Pittsburgh does have a legit defense. I mean, what they're doing, what they did in week one to Atlanta, I mean, obviously took me by surprise, where we all projected Atlanta to be, you know, an offensive juggernaut with the pieces they have down there. And then seeing Fields go toe-to-toe with Herbert in the first half of that game this past weekend was incredible. I think at one point that both of them mm-hmm. combined were 19 for 19, mm-hmm. in which, if you told me 2-3 years ago that Justin Fields was going to complete 10 passes in a row, I would have told you you're cracked in the head. Like, there's no way that's going to happen. But I do think Pittsburgh's really good. And then one thing that I do want to touch on really quickly, I know we've been gushing over Sam Darnold and the Vikings offense. I actually want to talk about the Vikings defense a little bit with that 3-0 team over there. They're led by somebody that we're very familiar with, and that's Brian Flores. And what he's doing with that defense right now is tremendous. The fact that they kept Houston Texans to 7 points yeah. this past week is insane. And I know everybody obviously wants to look at the touchdowns and then give all the praise to Sam Darnold. And yeah, you got Justin Jefferson and Aaron Jones, but they lost arguably their best defensive player, Danielle Hunter, in the offseason. And to do what they're doing to not only, like I said, Houston Texans this past week, what they did to Brock Purdy and the 49ers the week before is speaking volumes to what that culture change is doing in Minnesota right now. So I kind of have to put my hat out there and say that Minnesota could be the real deal. Now, the big thing is going to be the test when they go against Green Bay, if Jordan Love's healthy, and how that division plays out with obviously Detroit doing what they're doing as well. But I do like the Minnesota Vikings going forward. Now that we're gushing over our 3-0 team, seeing what we're at, let's talk about the poop fest, the stinkers, the people we love to clown on, my Tennessee Titans. Oh, boy, oh, boy, do I just love being right about how much of a clown show they are. Will Levis, oh, keep giving me the goods, buddy. I love seeing the memes of you every Monday morning when you're just sprawled out throwing a pick six, or you're looking up into the heavens going, why did I lateral that ball to the defending team? No, obviously we know how I feel about the Tennessee Titans, but like we talked about, the Bengals are a mystery team to me, right? I don't think they're supposed to be 0-3, Manish. Am I crazy?
No, I predicted that they would go to the Super Bowl this year, so how crazy am I? Yeah, look, their defense has really shown a lot of cracks in the armor. I'm a little surprised. You know, the defense wasn't as up to par as they were the year before, but I thought that was an aberration. I figured that Lou Anarumo would have that unit bounce back, but they're you know, they can't stop the run. They obviously let Jaden Daniels beat him over the top on Monday night. So all that being said, I still think they're making the playoffs, and I know what the numbers are. When you're 0-3, it's exceedingly more difficult to make the postseason, but when you have a healthy Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, now T. Higgins is healthy. The run game actually with Zach Moss and Chase Brown is looked pretty solid. So offensively, it's not a problem. It's defensively, can they correct the mistakes that have plagued them? You know, especially the last couple of weeks, giving up 25 and 33 points. I know they're playing the Chiefs, so giving up 25 points is somewhat understandable. But giving up 33 points at home to a rookie quarterback like they did to the Commanders was an eye opener for me, a surprise. They do have Carolina this week. I know we'll talk about that game a little bit later. So I don't anticipate they'll be 0-4. But, you know, they got to turn around. They got to turn around quickly. And you know, I'm a huge believer in Joe Burrow. And I don't think an 0-3 start is insurmountable for him.
Well said. Well said. Now, I had to save this for my buddy Burgess over here, because we've had some run-ins with this next team that we're going to talk about. And while I do like to clown on my Tennessee Titans, there was another team in the AFC South that I like to clown on first and foremost, because they came after me with torches and pitchforks earlier in the offseason because I said, and you can quote me, Trevor Lawrence was not that good. And now everybody and their mother is saying it. Burgess, is Jacksonville as bad as we think they are? Give me your best Dennis Green. Give me your best Dennis Green over there. They are who,
we thought they were. And we thought about the hook. You know, it is extremely concerning what's going on down there in Jacksonville. Trevor Lawrence only has 2 touchdown passes in 3 games. Like, their offense is anemic, to say the least. They just got their pants blown off them by Buffalo on Monday night. There's just a lot. Everything seems to be going wrong for them. I mean, they haven't had Evan Ingram, who was a very big piece of their offense last year. He's been hurt. You know, Christian Kirk hasn't been as involved necessarily as he was, you know, spreading the field out. They may miss Calvin Ridley, believe it or not. One of the bright spots, Brian Thomas, the rookie, has looked pretty good through 3 games. And, you know, talking with some of the, or seeing what some of the Jaguars fans have been, you know, saying on Twitter and all that, we obviously have our good friend John, who was on the podcast this summer to break down the AFC South. You know, they're talking about Doug Peterson, like, on a really hot seat right now, and whether or not he's going to be part of this team at the end of the season if they don't turn it around, let alone next year. And, you know, he's an offensive coach, right? He's, you know, was great with Philadelphia when they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And, you know, for whatever reason, Trevor Lawrence and this offense does not look anywhere remotely close to what we know, at least what I believe they are actually capable of being. And on the bright note, on a laughable note, we did get to see Mac Jones. Was it a fumble or a snap or something like that? He got sacked and he fumbled the ball. I'm like, oh, there's Mac Jones again. There's the Mac Jones we know.
Second play in the game, I think he handed the ball off, and then right after that he got strip sacked, and it was just like the game was already well over at that point. But yeah, that was vintage Mac Jones there. But no, you bring up an interesting point about Doug Peterson, because I read a little article today that was talking about how somebody who believes the same point as you do, where Doug Peterson might be overrated or what have you, and they talked about how when he was with Philadelphia, he really took advantage of the RPO when it was still in its infancy in the NFL and kind of exploited that to the Super Bowl run that they had against the Patriots that year. And then you notice that it kind of fell off and it didn't work as well going forward, because everybody on the planet knows the NFL is a copycat league, that once you do your little gimmicky thing once, it doesn't really work going forward because teams are prepared for it, they plan for it, and they can stop you with that. And I kind of was thinking about that, where I was like, well, I see one side of it where, yeah, they did take the world by storm with the RPO and the Philly special and all that hoopla when they won the Super Bowl. But he also had Jacksonville make the playoffs his first year there, where they had that monster comeback against the Chargers. And then, like I touched on in that solo show I did where I talked about, they were the number one seed in the AFC through 9 or 10 weeks last year before the wheels came off and they missed the playoffs completely. Manish, am I crazy or is Jacksonville overrated?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course they're overrated. They're 0-3. So who's rating them high at this point? You know, I thought they
Jacksonville fans. You heard them.
I thought they were a playoff team. Now, what I think is interesting is that their owner, Shad Khan, came out, I believe, this week and said, or maybe it was before the season, and he said that this is the most talented team that the Jags have had under his ownership, and the time to win is now. So clearly, he believes that they are underachieving. So if this continues and they do miss the playoffs, or if the wheels fall off completely and they're not even anywhere close to the playoffs, I'll be curious to see what Shad Khan does in the offseason. In terms of moving on potentially from Doug Peterson, and if he were to move on, would Bill Belichick be a potential replacement? There's a lot of talk about Belichick going to the Cowboys, maybe being interested in the Eagles. But Jacksonville's another place where I think, you know, depending on how the chips fall, I think that could be a viable spot. Shad Khan has shown that he is not afraid to pay head coaches. You know, paid Urban Meyer a bunch of money that didn't work out, but clearly an owner who was willing to invest in his head coach. And I'm saying from a, you know, power dynamic and from a financial standpoint. So just something to keep an eye on. It's obviously, we're not even a quarter way through the season yet, so Jacksonville can turn it around. But if things do go sideways, just based off of what Shad Khan has said, he thinks that this team is good enough to win. So obviously he's not happy with the 0-3 start. And will, if there's going to be a fall guy, will it be the head coach? It's certainly not going to be Trevor Lawrence. So just something to keep an eye on when you're looking at, you know, potential landing spots for Bill Belichick next season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for sure, especially in that division down there where, you know, a lot of people were assuming that Houston was just going to run away with it, where Jacksonville could have been in contention with it with the way they played the last few seasons, being a decent team up until this point. But also don't forget about, you know, Anthony Richardson and the Colts down there. And, Tennessee is not going to be any problem for them. So, like I said, had to get that out there, throw it out as always. Got a clown on the Tennessee Titans. So, all right, at this point, guys, we know where we're at with the 3-0 teams. We know where we're at with the 0-3 teams. Let's get into our picks from last week. Burgess, remind me, who went 0-3?
No comment.
No comment. Yeah, that's what basement dwellers over there always say, right? Anyway, your champion over here wants to remind all of you that I was successful last week in projecting that the Green Bay Packers would take care of business against the Clowns, a.k.a. the Titans. Who else was I? Oh, Seattle took care of business against Miami. And then my upset of the week, I called the Rams potentially knocking off the 49ers. I was actually more so thinking that the Rams were going to keep it close and not actually win the game, but then they just went ahead and just took care of business for me and just, you know, like I said, anointed the crown over here. So I'm going to kick us off this week, guys, with my picks for week 4, and we'll see if I can go the vaunted 6-0 to start the season. So for my first game, basement dweller, please keep it down over there. The king's talking. For my first pick, I do enjoy what Jayden Daniels in Washington did on Monday night. It was fantastic. Everybody's talking about how good he looked and what he did to the Cincinnati's defense there. I do not like them going to Arizona this week. I think the Arizona Cardinals are a decent team that have just run into some bad luck where they had to go up against a very tough Detroit team, and they should have beaten the Bills in week 1 where they kind of fell apart towards the end there, but they still made a valiant effort to come back. Blew the doors off the Rams. I like Arizona -3. Or was it 3.5? Sorry, Burgess, you got the stats.
-3.5, yes.
3.5. Okay, now watch, Arizona's going to win by 3, and I'm going to lose that one because of that.
Let's go!
That's my first pick of the week. My second pick of the week, remind me, Burgess, I'm already forgetting because I was so hyped up about how smart I was.
Wow, you have the Steelers -1.5 over the Indianapolis Colts.
That's right. That's why I was so high on the Steelers when we were talking about them earlier, because I do like the Steelers this week. Even though they're going to Indy, I think they're going to shut down Richardson. He's probably going to throw another 3 interceptions because that's what he loves to do. TJ Watt's going to have himself a field day. They're going to shut down Jonathan Taylor, and I think Justin Fields will continue to shock people. And yep, give me the Steelers -1.5. For my upset of the week, I don't know if I'm really counting it as an upset, but technically it's going to be an upset if they pull it off. Give me the Vikings over the Packers. Vikings +2.5. I think they're going to go in there. They're going to take care of business. Brian Flores is going to have that defense dialed up and ready to go, whether it's Malik Willis or if Jordan Love returns. Sam Darnold, keep it going with the MVP talks, buddy. Let me see what you got there. So there you have it, folks. I have the Cardinals -3.5. I have the Steelers -1.5. And I have the Vikings +2.5. I am now going to throw it to my good buddy Manish, who is in second place and not a basement dweller like my co-host Burgess.
All right, let me say that I'm going to pick 2 underdogs and 1 favorite. The first game is my lock of the week. It's my lock of the season so far in the first 4 of the season. It's the Buccaneers at home as 2-point dogs to the Eagles. So I'm taking Tampa. Coming off really an embarrassing loss to Denver, which only gives me that much more confidence that they're going to bounce back. The Eagles are banged up. Lane Johnson had a concussion. He's their best offensive lineman, the right tackle. Devontae Smith, concussion. He's probably not going to play. A.J. Brown, who's missed the last couple games with a hamstring. We'll see if he plays. He might not play. He hasn't practiced early in the week. So they could potentially be without their top 2 wide receivers and their best offensive lineman. I'm also really not impressed with the way the Jalen Hurts has played thus far. 2nd in the NFL in turnovers, only to Will Levis. So he hasn't taken care of the ball. I know that because Tampa lost last week, they're going to be on high alert. Baker Mayfield said earlier in the week, they got to treat all of these games like playoff games. Maybe their preparation last week against Denver was a little lax. Maybe took them for granted a little bit. I think they're going to win. Frankly, I think they're going to win comfortably. I could see a double-digit win. If you guys remember last year in the playoffs, Eagles went down to Tampa, got throttled. Different season, of course, but I think this is a big game for Baker Mayfield, potentially big game for Bucky Irving, who seems to be their best running back now that Rashard White has kind of sputtered through the first three games. So I like Tampa. Now, what I will say is I mentioned to both of you guys before we started recording, the last time I said that this was a lock and I was so confident, had nothing to do with picking an NFL game. It was during the 2014 NFL draft when the Jets had 12 draft picks. Their general manager was John Idzik at the time. And, you know, they were a rebuilding team. I thought to myself, there's no way they're going to make these 12 picks. They're going to trade up. They got a lot of draft capital to kind of move up or down the draft board. And that's when you have that many picks, that's typically what you do, because all 12 guys are not going to make the roster. It's just not, it's not realistic. So you do what you need to do to, you know, maybe move up in the middle rounds, or move up, if you can't move up in the earlier rounds, move up in day two, move up day three. I was so confident in that, and that was going to happen, that I said I would hitchhike home from the Jets facility in Florham Park to my house, which is about 70 miles away. And once we got to day three, I was even more confident. They didn't make a trade in day one or day two. Day three, they had an inordinate number of picks. I don't know if it was like six or seven picks. It just wasn't viable that they were going to keep all those picks. I was so confident they were going to trade the pick that I, you know, made that proclamation again. And lo and behold, they made all 12 picks without making a trade. So after the draft, as typically it goes in the NFL, the general manager, head coach, they come down, talk to the media when the draft is complete, and they kind of review not only their day three picks, but just kind of how they felt the entire draft went. So John Idzik, the GM at the time, comes to the draft. He's got a piece of paper, and it's something's printed on it. And before he says anything, he just holds up the piece of paper to the media in the media room, and it says hashtag hitchhike. So clearly the Jets were aware that I had made this prediction. And I'm not saying that's why they didn't make the trade. Made any trades. Obviously that's not. But the Jets had a lot of fun with it. And it was a 12-player draft. Their best player, as it turned out, was a six-round pick, Quincy Enunwa, who was a really, you know, tough wide receiver, but it didn't last too long in the league. But I've always maintained that they should have packaged some of those picks and traded up. And I did not hitchhike. And the reason I did not hitchhike home is that a few months after the draft, I tore my ACL playing basketball. So I was like literally in crutches for the rest of the summer. And I never got around to, you know, hitchhiking. And I heard it on Twitter, or X, or Twitter at the time, from all these fans that said I was fugazi because I didn't, you know, follow through on the bet. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I was in crutches for the first like 6 weeks of the season. So that was the last time I was this confident in a pick. So I would be stunned if the Eagles win. And anyway, it pains me to say it, you know, being unofficially an Eagles fan. But I just think that Tampa as a home underdog, it's to me that it's a layup. So we'll see what happens, you know, in a few days, but I really like that pick. The other underdog I'm picking, it's an undefeated underdog. The 3-0 Bills are underdogs at Baltimore on Sunday night. I think Burge, you talked about this. You used the exact right word. I think the Bills are dangerous. They've really diversified their offense, and Josh Allen even came out earlier this week and said it's great to, you know, be around a team where guys aren't concerned about their touches and their catches. You know, people took that to mean that that was some sort of shot at Stephon Diggs. Josh Allen came out later and said he wasn't taking a shot at Diggs, so make of that what you will. But the bottom line is that there's a different guy each of these 3 weeks that's making a difference. You know, 2 weeks ago against Miami, it was James Cook. Last week, it was Shakir, and Dalton Kincaid finally got involved. So there is an unpredictable nature to that offense, and Josh Allen is not throwing the ball all around the field. He's not throwing it 35, 40 times a game. He's really limiting his pass attempts, but he's making the most of it. I think they're dangerous. On the flip side, the Ravens, desperate team last week, excuse me, beat the Cowboys, got one of those picks wrong last week, but they've got three offensive linemen who are banged up. We'll see how healthy they are if they all go. But I do think that this is going to be a classic game. Anytime you get a 3-0 team that I think is scary and dangerous, getting points, even though it's on the road, I think you take it. So I'm taking the Bills. The last game is I'm taking a favorite, but they're winless. and that's the 0-3 Bengals, which we talked about at Carolina. I know it's a revenge game for Andy Dalton, you know, being that he played in Cincinnati all those years. And it was a great story last week for Andy Dalton to get the 303, you know, as you mentioned, Hogan. But you talk about a desperate team. The Bengals at 0-3 will not go 0-4 by losing to the Carolina Panthers. I can promise you that. That was almost my co-lock of the week. But I think that the Bengals, I think it's -4. I think they're going to win. They're going to win by a touchdown. And you're going to see a much better effort out of that defense. I think the offense is just going to continue to get better with a healthy T. Higgins back in the fold. I'm taking the 0-3 Bengals to get off the schneid this week.
All right. So from everything you just said, the only thing I got out of all of that is if Tampa Bay does not win, you have to hitchhike. You have to hitchhike up to New Hampshire to visit me and Burge and hang out with us for next week. Okay. And we're going to get hashtag hitchhike go like trending on Twitter again. That's my promise for you right now.
I am too old to hitchhike anywhere now. It's also not safe. That's a different discussion, but I will tear my other ACL if I have to get out of this if I lose.
I was going to say, I don't see crutches, Manish. I'm holding you to it at this point. So
that's, I still have my own crutches, so I will have them in the background if I lose next week and just say that I tore my ACL.
I love it. I love your stories, buddy. That's fantastic. All right, so we got my picks. Manish, we got your picks. Basement dweller over here, what do we got for your three picks this week?
Well, hopefully it's going to be a better week than last week, because last week was absolutely brutal. 0-3, don't listen to me. Let's just say I'm going to pick all dogs for my three picks this week. Yes, I'm going to be the homer again. I'm going to take the Patriots playing the 49ers. They're getting 10.5 points. The 49ers are banged up all over the ball. Debo's banged up, didn't participate in practices so far this week. Kittle's limited, banged up. They just found out that they lost Javon Hargrave for the season in the game on Sunday against the Rams. So, you know, their defense is hurting. 10.5 points is too big a number for me to pass up. You know, the Patriots defense, I expect, will rebound from their performance after having basically kind of a longer layoff, a semi-half bye week since they played last Thursday night. I expect them to be better. I expect the running game to have some success for the Patriots to keep this close. I don't believe they're going to win the game, but I believe that they're going to keep it close like they did in the first 2 weeks of the season and cover that 10.5 point spread there. So give me the Patriots plus 10.5 plus the points versus the 49ers. I'm going to go with Mr. Hogan here, his favorite team of all time. I'm going to pick the Tennessee Titans plus 1. Playing another team that we talked about seems to have lost their way without their quarterback, and that's the Miami Dolphins. To me, it's too much to not take the underdog here. I think that the Miami Dolphins are in a very bad way despite the talent on their offense, given the uncertainty of the type of play that they're going to get from the quarterback position, whether that's Skylar Thompson or Tyler Huntley. So give me the Titans plus 1 over Miami. My third pick, I'm going to take the Saints plus 2 over the Falcons. You know, the Saints are coming off a loss last week where their offensive output was next to nothing compared to what we saw in the first 2 weeks of the season. I was on here last week talking about how much I think that they are, you know, a legitimate team. I expect this is going to be a tough divisional game. The Falcons are also coming off a tough loss where they played the Chiefs pretty tight. You know, on Sunday Night Football, where they probably should have won the game if the refs didn't insert themselves there at the end with the pass interference and Kyle Pitts. So, you know, make of it what you will there, but I just like the Saints this year, and I'm going to give them another chance here to, you know, right their wrong from last week where they lost to Philly after I picked them. So I'm sticking with them. I'm picking two of the same teams that I took last week. So I'm kind of doubling down on my 0-3 week last week. So hoping for a better week here. I'm also the only one of the three of us that decided to take all underdogs. So at least I got some balls on me. Let's be real.
I'm sorry. Did you pick the upset of the week like I did last week? I don't believe you did. And also,
I picked all three games. I didn't pick favorites. Exactly.
And how'd you do?
We'll find out. We'll find exactly. out on Sunday. Yeah, we'll exactly. find out on Sunday.
I despise you for making me have to root for the Miami Dolphins against the hapless Tennessee Titans because I want you to be wrong again. So that thanks Good. For that. I appreciate Good. That. All right. Well, at this point, guys, I think that is going to put a wrap on things. I'm having a blast so far. This is a very interesting NFL season where who knows what the heck's going to happen at this point. A lot of these teams, like we talked about, we didn't see coming out of the gate either on fire the way they are or some of them being as terrible as they are, but all I know is it's interesting, it's fascinating, and I can't wait to see what keeps happening down the road. So for all you listeners out there that are still hanging out with us, we love and appreciate every single one of you. If you want more information, podcasts, anything football related, any sports related, check out everything on the Fans First Sports Network, where you can find all sorts of stuff between football, hockey, basketball, professional wrestling. I don't know if they have anything crazy like cricket or any of that stuff yet, but I'm sure it's coming at some point. So just check it out. We got all the stuff in the world, and we couldn't be more excited to be a part of this network. So for Burgess and Manish and myself, we thank you guys, and we will see you all next week. Burge,
peace.
Later.